Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition. Mac users were made to spend money.
Okay, this has been difficult to coordinate with my new Brooklyn apartment. Love it as I do. We do have a lot more noise challenges, but we're back. We have a quiet moment. Manton, I know that it's not always super simple for you to find peace and quiet at your place either, but it seems like you have a little easier time than I do. It sounds pretty quiet there right now. I think I hear the Austin crickets coming through the air.
Yeah, it's not too bad now. All the kids are in school. That helps a lot. During the summer, it's more challenging.
I was going to start this show by celebrating my Mac App Store debut and laughing maniacally at Manton for his terrible, terrible luck of failing to get accepted into the App Store. But Apple must have sensed that, and they just swept in on Wednesday night. We're recording this on Friday, the 14th of January, 2011. And on Wednesday night, 2 days ago, Apple said, that guy we've been screwing with for 2 months. Yeah, let's approve him.
Yeah, it's almost too bad we didn't record earlier, because I would be really angry. I'd be yelling into the microphone. I would be upset. I'd have to beep most of the show out.
And I'd be like sitting here counting my App Store dollars and just going, Manton, how many thousands of dollars do I have to give you to shut you up?
Right. Well, it's funny. I mean, because, you know, I wasn't in the store on day one, even though I submitted, you know, 2 months ago, and I was in review for 6 or 7 weeks, and then finally the App Store is getting ready to launch, and I'm getting worried, like, clearly Apple has forgotten about my app. They're not that overloaded. And so I tried to contact them and say, what's going on? And I think that was finally enough for them to remember that, hey, there's an app that's been kind of sitting here being ignored. But of course they rejected it for a, you know, Sparkle technicality. I resubmitted right away, and then I went back into the queue, and so I missed about a week when everyone else was launching. And I think it's fine. I mean, I actually kind of, in some ways, like kind of watching the store for a little while and then coming in. But at the same time, I know there were a whole bunch of people that immediately jumped on the Mac App Store, like, what can I buy? This is a new thing. It's exciting. And so it is a little bit frustrating to see friends have their app out there, and like you said, you're swimming in your pile of money, and that's just a lost opportunity.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's definitely always going to be a give, you know, like a give and take to all of these, you know, purported advantages. What you were saying just now reminded me actually of another sort of bummer situation. A friend of ours got into Gus Mueller from Flying Meat. You know, he has Acorn, his graphics editor, in the store. And what he ran into was the exact opposite problem of you, Manton, which is he got approved too early.
Yeah.
So he submitted probably around the same time you did, maybe even earlier.
Yep, a little bit. I think a couple weeks earlier.
He was like, they like it. I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And what this had the effect of doing is, this is the classic, you know, App Store release date ordering kind of thing. But basically, because he was approved so early, he shows up now in the store as like this ancient app from the bottom of the list. So
right.
If you go into graphic editors, it's like, there's this hot new stuff, you know, and then, a while back there was this other stuff like Acorn, but you have to scroll to the bottom of the list.
And he also got into this problem where he was in the wrong category, right?
Oh,
he was
right.
In photography instead of graphics or apps or whatever. And so that, I think that was kind of... you know, that probably hurt him too, just not being in the right place. But yeah, that helped me being late, because when my app did finally get approved, I'm in the video category. This is Clipstart, the only app that I submitted. I was the first app in the list, right? Because I was the only app that got approved that day. Now there's a couple other apps that have gotten approved, but I still expect there's so few apps in some of these categories. I think the video app can't have more than 50 apps in it at the most.
Right.
There's so few apps that I expect that I will stay in that top recently, you know, released list for at least a week or so, maybe longer. So that helps people discover the app. And then of course getting up in, you know, the top 10 lists and stuff, which I was able to do yesterday. That was really nice. And again, helps people find the app.
Right. Yeah. That's, I think that's what a lot of us are. Well, I think that first of all, let me say there's 1,000+ apps in the Mac App Store. And some of us were extremely lucky to get called out into the new, like, hot and featured section for the launch day. And that totally skewed our understanding of what the App Store experience is like. So those of us who were that lucky are now looking at it like, okay, this is going to come to an end. You know,
right.
I see the darkness at the end of this brightly lit tunnel. And I guess the question is, what happens, A, when presumably over time thousands more apps come into the store and we sort of just disappear into, you know, into the crowd. What's going to be interesting is how much in the long term do things like ratings and, you know, the sort of like initial boost of sort of like revenues, what is it, top grossing charts presence, how much does that sort of stick with us and self-perpetuate? Obviously, it's clear how I would like that to work, but it's going to be interesting. And another huge like win for some people, including our friend Will Shipley, you know, there are sort of different degrees of being featured in the App Store. And there's that sort of huge one where you go to the featured section on the homepage of the App Store and there's like four or five apps being cycled through the gigantic banner. And Will was lucky enough to get a spot in there. And he publicly tweeted that the impact of that on him was something like the App Store sold 12 times as many copies as his regular, you know, self-sold stuff. So yep. It's like, oh, okay.
That's amazing.
That's a good thing. That's where you want to be. So I think what my takeaway from that and the experience on the App Store so far is, for example, if I make another app, I'm going to be, I hate to say it, you know, there's this old phenomenon of people sort of designing for the Apple Design Awards. And I think we may still see the Apple Design Awards come back to the Mac, but another really more purely financial incentive now is going to be designing for the App Store feature, right? Like if you can sort of key into what kinds of apps and how they're pictorially represented, how the features are sold to users, you know, and sort of try to aim your app into that target, then I imagine you'll increase your odds of hitting that feature jackpot. So we'll see.
Although you never want to, I mean, you never want to build your app from the ground up just thinking about how it's going to show up in the App Store. I mean, I guess you kind of, you do in the sense that you want to build an app that you can market and that will appeal to people. But I think you can definitely get into a trap of saying, okay, I know what a number one App Store app looks like.
Definitely,
and then be disappointed. Because I know there's a lot of developers who tried that on the phone. Like, we've got a great app idea. It's the 99 cent next big hit. And they're disappointed because it's so hard to be that next Angry Birds, right? There's a whole bunch of worthy apps that for one reason or another, they don't resonate and they don't catch on. And they're not in, you know, the top 10 list. And so, unfortunately, the developers gambled that they were going to sell a million copies at 99 cents and they only sold, you know, a smaller number, and you can't make any money on a 99 cent app unless you're, you know, selling huge numbers of copies.
Yeah. That's, speaking of that, that's been one of my personal satisfactions coming out of this App Store debut is, you know, granted my category for Mars Edit, I put it in the social networking category, which some people find fault with, but I think it's appropriate.
What?
Yeah, well.
What else would it be?
I know. Well, that's the thing. The categories are not all that extensive. So, you know, there's no, like, internet category, which is something it could be in, presumably. But, you know, there's relatively few apps in the social networking category, and a lot of them are free Twitter apps or very cheap Twitter apps.
Right.
So I was, you know, going into this, a lot of people were speculating, is this going to be a drive to the bottom for pricing, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I, like many developers, went in with a stance that, no, this is another sales outlet. This is not a discount deli or whatever. This is a, you know, another place to put my apps and sell them for a fair price. So for starters, I stuck with $40 for Mars Edit. And that's where it still is. And the payoff for me, compared to some apps that maybe, you know, went down and dropped their prices to the gutter, is Mars that it has been consistently in and out of number one top grossing in the US for the social networking category.
Awesome.
Which is, you know, it's something. And yeah, I'm not exactly getting rich off of that, which is an indicator that the App Store hopefully still has upside potential, you know.
Yeah.
It's really cool that it's not like a total rejection for having a fair price, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like I said this on Twitter, I think, before the App Store debuted, and we're talking about pricing, and, you know, Dan Council from Real Mac has been talking a lot about pricing, and they dropped some of their app prices specifically to try to capture this App Store mentality.
Yep.
And you know what? I mean, I think it's working for them, so I can't exactly fault that strategy as far as it works for them. But my sort of punk ass retort was, you know, you don't. So it was something like, it's a question of whether it's not a question of whether you want to make $10 software. It's a question of whether you want to have $10 customers or something like that. You know, it's like you sort of choose the price of customer you want when you set your software price.
Well, and we've talked a bunch about how the price sends a message, you know, about how much you think your app is worth.
That's right.
I noticed today, Little Snapper, one of the Real Mac apps, great app, really polished. When it came out, the 1.0, I mean, everyone really liked it. It was really well done. It launched at $40. They dropped it to $35 at some point. When they launched in the Mac App Store, they dropped it to $25. And then today they dropped it to $5. And it's like, yeah, this is not a $5 app. This is a good app. I mean, no, this is worth something. So I don't.
Yeah. It is so challenging because I can. What hurts me is I hate the image that projects, and I hate the sort of precedent of saying that this thing is worth $5. And yet, because software is, you know, a zero cost to reproduce commodity, you know, that can actually work. It might work for them.
Yep.
There is a support cost, of course, but, you know, it's the same argument sort of going back again to the whole, like, the bundles, which I did actually participate in one, as most people know, recently. My mind is not inflexible about this idea of software pricing. And obviously, if it was completely inflexible, it would be a terrible sort of impingement on my business, my ability to run the business. But there's something to grapple with there. We'll see how it plays out. But, you know, when it comes down to it, hey, if $5 became the new standard price for apps that you sell 500,000 copies of, I'm okay with that, I think.
Right.
I think I can deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, they know what they're doing, and it's a really great app. I have a feeling it has a low cost to support that app. Using it previously. So, I mean, they know what they're getting into. I think for that particular app, they'll probably bump it back up and find a middle ground that fits.
You make a great point calling out the fact that different apps have different support costs. And I think that's one of the things, for example, I need to be really careful with Mars Edit. Ever since I acquired it, even before that, I remember Brent and his wife Sheila were talking about how, you know, it's a harder to support app than most apps because of all the various connections and things that can go wrong with different network setups, server setups, etc.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, something like my FlexTime app is kind of like a software version of some like specialized hardware device you might buy. You know, it's got buttons and you expect behaviors, and it either, you know, sort of follows through on those behaviors or it doesn't. And I think that there's, let's put it bluntly, I need to make more software like that.
exactly.
And you probably experienced some of that, you know, difference of support burden among your apps as well. Like I imagine, for example, that something like Clipstart, which, by the way, if we didn't mention people, that's the one, that's the app that Manton has in the App Store now. Clipstart, very cool. It's basically like the missing iTunes for video on your Mac. But that's something where I could see there being some support problems with importing videos from different devices. But a lot of that's sort of contained in behavior that is already sort of tested by Apple, right? Like you're using technology from Apple to get that stuff off the device.
Yeah, the importing stuff is pretty solid. I have a couple ways of doing that, but I have real support problems with that. The two categories of support things I have with that app are just people trying to make sense of their videos. Like they've got duplicates and they've got things in iPhoto and iMovie and, you know, how do the apps work together and that kind of thing. That's probably the biggest one. Just helping people deal with that kind of mess that when you move to a new app and let's say you've got 1,000 videos, you know, how do you transition?
Right.
So then file formats is the other thing. Like every once in a while, there's some weird video codec or something, but I get support email for it, but they're all pretty solvable problems. Like I usually have an answer or a good answer for them. Actually, WeTransfer is the more difficult one to support because, like you said, I mean, there's a lot with Mars Edit. You know, you have a lot of network issues. Same kind of thing with WeTransfer. I mean, people can have, you know, their router is messed up when they're trying to get their Wii to see their Mac, and I mean, you know, Bluetooth is flaky. I mean, there's a lot of weird networking stuff going on in the app that can break, and then I'm not at this person's house. I don't know what's wrong. You know, it's really difficult. And that's actually one of the reasons I did not submit the app to the App Store is I don't really want to encourage impulse buys on that app. I really want people to try the demo, and it doesn't work for everybody. And I really want them to give it a try, work through the problems, email me if they can, and then buy it and be happy with it. And I have a feeling it's the kind of app that people would just buy without trying.
Yeah.
When it's on the Mac App Store, and I'd sell a bunch of copies, but long term, I don't think that would be quite right. So I'm trying to figure out how to evolve the app and reposition it and also make it like completely idiot proof when problems do happen. So to make it a little more appealing. The other reason is I think Apple would reject it for trademark violation, but we'll see when I get to that point.
Here's an interesting idea. So, what's coming to mind is, God, I share that feeling of I don't want to be selling copies of my stuff to people who regret it like 5 minutes later. I think there is some risk of that in the App Store with the lack of demos, but it's really hard to look at some of the increase in sales and say, you know, how much can I turn away, like possibly a doubling of my sales just because I believe this kind of private between me and my own personal business ethics thing. And it's not like we're forcing people to buy something they don't want. They're making this decision the same way they would picking a box up off the shelf at the store. Right.
Yeah.
So it's challenging. It's weird. I think, I wonder if the solution in your case where you really feel strongly that you don't want to like have people fall in a sense, it's like you feel it so strongly that it's more than just an ethical thing. It's like you kind of also don't want to deal with the fallout of maybe having a disproportionate number of unhappy users.
Right.
So I wonder if there's some scheme for WeTransfer to have a really light version that you give away for free in the App Store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and maybe it'll only let I don't have a Wii, so it's hard for me to relate to the he doesn't have a Wii. I don't have a Wii, so it's hard for me to relate to the feature set really. But I wonder if something like WeTransfer, where you can only use one avatar or whatever, you know, the thing, whatever the unit of transfer is. I don't know, something to think about. You know, Manton, I think maybe our listeners could, if we talked long enough, it's possible that they could actually get tired of us droning on about the Mac App Store.
Yeah, maybe.
So maybe we should offer to shift our attention to a question from the audience.
Sure.
Let's see. Let's go through our list here. Anything jumping out at you, or should I just pick something?
Go ahead and pick something, because I haven't read this list recently.
Okay. How about...
And you know, at least we're not talking about Verizon for 30 minutes.
Oh, I know. Seriously.
It's good news. Let's move on.
Well, we should have had this prepared, but how about Ben Kimball asks a pertinent question, I think, for especially right now with the Mac App Store. We have this like reverse migration of iPhone developers to the Mac that people are like, oh my God, actually the Mac is a gold mine. I can sell my app. It's the same damn app, and I can sell it on the Mac for like five times as much. I can sell it for $4.99 instead of 99 cents. And these people will pay for it. It's like Mac users were developed from the dawn of time to spend money. Oh my God, this is insane. So if you're out there and you're in this position, you know, I guess it's not really most people who have been working iPhone stuff now, they basically know their cocoa. But there are a lot of persnickety details when you come back to the Mac, from iOS, you know, all kinds of new UI frameworks that are totally foreign and frankly, in many ways behave a lot more, sort of like confusingly than on the iOS UI kit. Anyway, getting to the to the crux of this question, Ben Kimball, a longtime listener, asks, have you or anyone you know attended the developer training offered by Big Nerd Ranch? It looks really good, but it's fairly expensive. Are there alternatives to classroom learning that you'd recommend? Personally, I have known a few people who have attended Big Nerd Ranch, and I have known a few people who have taught there, and I know that they always... Never, ever have I ever heard a negative thing about the training at Big Nerd Ranch or the environment. The only thing that comes up as an issue and the fact that it's not framed negatively in general by anybody who has gone says a lot, but it is fairly pricey, you know. The thing that keeps coming back from people I know who go there, who have gone there, is it's pricey, but it's worth it.
Right. I have never been, but I hear... universally great things about it. I think there's nothing like being immersed in something like that for several days and just getting it done. Like, it's really difficult. A lot of people have a really difficult problem actually making the time to learn something new or to build the app or ship it or whatever. Maybe it's a side project. Maybe they just don't have enough time. And actually being forced to just do it for 3 or 4 days straight or however long some of these classes are, you know, you're in the middle of you're away from your normal distractions and you're with great teachers and just, you know, get it done. I think that could work for a lot of people.
Yeah. So what about other classes? Do you know of anything to really suggest otherwise?
I don't. I mean, what I usually throw out is different books, you know, people can pick up and try to get into it. Again, you have to be willing to sit down and, you know, learn it at your own pace. There's also, I've been pointing people to the iDeveloper TV tutorials lately. I haven't actually watched any of the recent ones, but they're really in-depth and long. I mean, for just like a couple hundred bucks, I think you get hours of footage going in-depth on beginning iPhone development or core data or whatever. And he's built up a pretty nice set of videos for those. So I think people should definitely check that out.
Yeah, to frame that a little bit more for people, that's the one of the more recent pursuits from our friend Scotty over in the UK, who does among other things the NS conference, and he did this Late Night Cocoa podcast for a long time. He's done developer profile podcasts. He's kind of just like he switched to the Mac a few years ago, and he's just been like on rapid fire doing every which way developer community organizing things. And bringing Scotty up, it reminds me, actually, NS Conference in the UK is happening in March.
Just sold out.
So kudos to Scotty. He had a very clear 150 attendee limit. And I guess he met that goal in 5 days. So
that's amazing.
Great. It's starting to sound a little bit more like C4 sales rates.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the interesting thing for our listeners in the UK or in Europe is I know how interested you are in me and my sweet, sweet voice. So you will be able to hear my voice and see me at the same time, not only at the various social events surrounding the conference, but on stage as I try to impart some wisdom on the subject of customer support. So this is going to be my talk at NS Conference, and if anybody in Europe is planning on attending, I will see you there.
That sounds great. I'm really jealous. It sounds like a really good lineup of folks.
Maybe you should offer to talk on customer service as well and tell Scotty that you're better at it than me.
No, I'll let you. I'll
just
let
say,
you
actually, that guy, not reliable.
He learned his best tricks from me.
That's right. Yep.
Now, that'll be good, though. And the timing is interesting for what we've been talking about on the show. Like, what effect does the Mac App Store have on customer support? I don't know yet because I've only been in the store for 2 days. But I actually think support load is going to be a little bit higher.
Really?
Well, because here's why. They go to the Mac App Store, and yes, they can click over my website and they can download the demo, but they're lazy and they don't want to do that. So they email questions instead. And I have a feeling there's going to be a little more questions up front over email than normally, just because I shouldn't say lazy. Maybe they don't know there's a demo, right? Because Apple has been
Manton
discouraging people.
Manton thinks
from
his customers are lazy.
Well, I mean, I'm the same way, though. Like, I've clicked around in the Mac App Store, and I know some of these have demos, but I'm just clicking around. I'm browsing. I'm figuring out what is there, and I bought a couple things without trying them.
I totally know what you mean, but I think that this is going to be slide one on my don't call your customers lazy. No,
you put a picture of me, like a really ugly, grumpy face, like, really mad at people.
Oh, I've never seen that face, Manton.
Yeah. So no, but the point is, like, they're going to have more questions potentially. They're buying a $30 or $40 app, and there's a demo, but they don't know there's a demo. So they're going to email support, maybe, and ask some questions to know if the app is right for them. They're going to see, you know, does Mars Edit work with such and such blog, or, you know, whatever, something that's not covered in the docs or not covered well. And actually, similar to that, I've noticed people. So I, on my website, I have this one page product description, features, screenshots, mini FAQ, here's how to buy it. It's like all one page, everything you need to know. On the App Store, it's marketing copy. It doesn't have, like, the frequently asked questions and that kind of thing.
Right.
And this is kind of a problem because there's some, you know, common questions that are answered on that first page on my website.
Yep.
That are not answered in the App Store. And I need to sort of reconcile that somehow so that people are getting the information they need.
I have seen some iOS, on iOS App Store at least, sometimes people do sort of tackle that problem by taking the marketing copy and really front-loading it with, like, you know, asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. If you do not own a device that this is requires, do not buy this, you know?
Yes.
And sometimes that's, like, it's ugly, but it gets the point across. And maybe something like that is, like, maybe line one, and maybe this would apply to your WeTransfer concerns as well. It's like line one, if you're thinking about purchasing this, please read this FAQ link, you know?
Yeah.
It's an idea.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea.
So, Manton, it's been great talking with you. I hope your ClipStart sales continue and rise. And, you know, one thing I forgot to mention is I really hope that one of the interesting things for us developers now who are on the Mac App Store is we suffer and benefit sort of at the whim of Apple, not just from the sort of crapshoot of whether Apple will feature us or, you know, put us in the staff picks or say new and noteworthy, et cetera, but now it's sort of like in Apple's ballpark whether the App Store does amazingly well or just sort of, you know, meanders along. Like, I personally, on behalf of all developers, please, Apple, make a TV ad, right?
Oh, yeah.
Get people to use this. Get, you know, people still don't know about it. And that's one of my, like, optimistic notes is, like, as time goes on, you know, I think you're right, Manton, that the day one, it was like a bunch of geeks we know who were like, oh, didn't you hear it's Mac App Store day. I totally updated and bought some stuff and they're lazy and they're geeks and they're ugly. And, but you know, I was getting the strong sense, this is not sort of the target audience we're waiting for and expecting to reach. You know, to some extent, yep, it is maybe some people, like some geeks installed it on their parents' Mac, etc. But longer term, we're expecting this to reach those, you know, millions of Macs that have never even considered buying software. So, you know, and in general, the App Store sales have been sort of declining since the launch, and I think this has been true for most people. But I'm really hopeful that it's going to keep going. It'll go up at Apple's discretion, sort of. You know, I know we can't invest too much in Apple marketing our apps for us, but you know, we'll continue doing the same marketing we've always been doing, and we can hope that Apple sort of takes that, steers that ship into the harbor with the most customers. How's that poetic, huh?
That's great. Yep. Day one was all about geeks updating so they could download the new Twitter app.
That's right. That's the only way to get Twitter. Yeah.
And the next week's it's hopefully going to be all about people that bought a new Mac. And guess what? The Mac App Store is the first icon in the dock next to the Finder, and they're going to click on it. And so your app is basically two clicks away. It's nice.
Yep. Okay, well, I hope to talk to you soon, but the fact of the matter is, you know, and I know, and our listeners should know by now, that there's no way we're going to find time to record again when we are so filthy, stinking rich from the App Store. I mean, this was fun. It was scrappy. It was interesting. It was a nice time.
Yep.
Will there be another Core Intuition? I prefer margaritas on the beach.
Sure. We need to work on the whole remote mic setup so that we can be on the beach with our family and still, you know, record. We might need to cut it down to maybe like a 5-minute show every 3 or 4 months. But
yeah, the next episode of Core Intuition is going to sound just like those Corona beer commercials.
Right, exactly. Get the waves in the background. It'll be really calming. Yeah. If people haven't fallen asleep listening to the last 30 episodes or whatever, definitely the next one. It's going to be.
Yes,
put you right under.
Well, soothing tones of the beach and our Corona glasses hitting the table, guacamole easing its way onto a soft tortilla chip.
Oh, nice. I gotta go sell some copies of my app.
Okay. Well, I'll see you later.
Bye.